welcome to Biker Byte. My name is Gavin Clark. I'm software editor with The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor of the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet.
And in the month of Microsoft and Nokia officially tied the knot, suddenly Windows Phone is bricking Samsung handsets. Is it time for Nokia to finally get worried? Internet Explorer 9 is getting ready to drop, and apart from the beauty of the web, Microsoft's pushing privacy. We look at what the company's up to on the PC and the mobile platform for its browser. And big man Satya Nadella is now leading Microsoft's server and tools business, and the company's push into the cloud. What does this mean for Azure and the team driving the technology? So MJ, it's been quite a busy month. I feel like we've already lived a year with Microsoft already. January and February, they've packed in so much news. It's been exhausting just to keep up, I feel.
It's true.
What have we had so far? We've had the Microsoft Nokia announcement was pretty big. I think there was a lot of talk that there was going to be some kind of relationship between the two companies. And what we got, well, it wasn't necessarily a surprise at the end of the day, but it was like watching a train wreck happen at the time. We watched it in slow motion. For me, the funniest thing was when Nokia announced that Windows Phone was going to become its premier smartphone platform. One of the journalists at the event actually asks Nokia CEO Stephen Elop whether he is a Microsoft Trojan.
That was hilarious.
And it's the question was on everyone's mind as well. It just had to be asked. Never mind, you know, release schedules and platform nuances. Like, are you a Microsoft Trojan?
Yeah. Somebody asked me if I thought he was, and I said, boy, if he was, that would really make you believe that Microsoft's very much more organized and very much more Machiavellian than I think the company actually is, especially organized.
Exactly. Well, it looks like they've got Juniper as well, currently ready to fall for them too, because one of their guys is now CEO there too, isn't he?
Yeah.
So what did they announce? It was, you know, a lot of people got excited. A lot of people were quite depressed. The open source guys were very depressed about this news. And it was, you know, as I said, Windows Phone is going to become the premier platform for all Nokia smartphone handsets now. That meant dropping of Symbian, which wasn't a great surprise. What was a bit of a surprise was the ditching of MeeGo. It's now just a project. And that was good, and Stephen Elop was talking up the technology, and a lot of people kind of debated, you know, Elop's decisions, and many people thought he was in a corner. He had no clear way to go, although he could have stuck with the current course, which was a losing strategy, or he could have gone with a known winner or a known existing factor like Windows, or he could even have gone Android. And we know that Google and Microsoft were both in bidding contracts with Nokia to take on their OS. If it ultimately, for whatever reason, Elop chose his former employer's operating system, which is Windows Phone, and then we thought that was it. And then a few days later, Elop must have choked into his cornflakes when he read about how Windows Phone, Samsung handsets running Windows Phone 7 had actually been bricked by the latest update, which is kind of interesting. When we say brick, that basically means that the phone can't be used. That Microsoft put out what turned out to be a very simple update to the handsets, and a percentage we worked out, excuse me, was 10% of Windows. Was it Windows Phone or was it Samsung phones?
It was 10% of all phones, I believe.
10% of all phones. Were actually rendered useless by this Microsoft phone update. And as I said, it was
It wasn't 10% were bricked, but it was 10% of the 2 million phone copies of the phone operating system that have been put out there. However many of those actually are phones, we don't know. 10% of that total had problems with the update in some way. Either it just didn't ever take, or it bricked their phones.
Yeah. Now, we learned subsequently, well, we knew it was a firmware update, which we know a lot of people kind of shy away from, because updating your firmware is a critical issue. If that goes wrong anyway, you really have killed your phone. And we know that most people avoid this kind of thing. Even Apple avoids this kind of thing with its iPhone. So Microsoft has been on the offensive. They've been trying to minimize the issue. The Windows Phone blog came out, and Michael Strug put out an announcement. He tried to minimize it, saying it was only 10% of people experienced a problem. They blamed user error, people not having enough memory. on their phones. People, they also said some people might actually have stopped their internet connection at the time. Well, you know, it's a big problem. You know, it's a big problem, as we all know, because you can blame the user as much as you like. And we're all in the tech industry, and tech industry people like to blame the end user at any given opportunity. But it's the end user who's got the dollars and is going to buy these phones. So when your Samsung handset suddenly stops working and you've got this brand new operating system on it, what you're going to do is going to make you think twice about buying a second Windows Phone handset if the first one just stopped working. Although the same rule doesn't necessarily apply to Apple customers, I've noticed, when you're standing at the Genius Bar and all those iPods stop working, they give you a free one, you just take it. Maybe that's what Microsoft needs to do, get more free handsets.
I think they need their own reality distortion field, right?
They do. They need to hire Steve Jobs.
They do.
Yeah, we've had this conversation before. So that's the problem. It was a very fundamental error. Microsoft's trying to minimize it. But, you know, what was interesting, I thought, was the whole rationale for restricting Windows Phone to, was it a list of, was it five OEMs in the early days and a handful of handsets, was so that the thing wouldn't fall over. So that they could know the anatomy of the phone, so there'd be no nasty surprises. And only we're now talking in terms of the next update to Windows Phone will enable more, lift some of the restrictions that the current version imposes, such as multitasking. And I think there'll be some drag and drop as well. There'll be some changes there that Microsoft has deemed were necessary this time, again, to keep the thing bulletproof and stop it falling over. So it just goes to show that this thing is not as reliable as we thought. And I think you, MJ, you threw out an interesting stat, and this 10% figure. I mean, if this had happened on the PC, this would have affected a large number of people. If Windows Update had crippled 10% of PCs, this would be a big problem for Microsoft.
Yes, it would. It would. And, you know, there's, like, still, after Microsoft did its blog post and its damage control and all that, there's still a lot of things we don't know, which is to me is a little disconcerting. You know, it's like, we don't really know what this update was for. I mean, I've seen people describe it as an update to clear the way for the first update. Okay, so what was it supposed to do? Like, was it actually adding any functionality onto your phone? Because I've also read, although not from Microsoft, that you have to have this first update to get the next update. And so if your carrier blocked it for some reason, or you're a Samsung user and you didn't get it, somehow you've got to get it on your phone before you can get this next update, which is coming in early March, this Noto update that has the copy and paste. It's like, I know they can't respond to every single query from every single person who wants to know exactly what happened to their particular configuration, but I really kind of feel like they went missing when this happened. It's like you couldn't get an answer for 48 hours, basically, except that, yeah, we know something's wrong and we're looking into it. I don't think that's acceptable.
No, I think This is possibly the scenario Microsoft was trying to avoid in the first place by having the restricted number of handsets and OEM providers, but it just shows you can have a problem. Although I'm surprised, you know, on this small number of handsets that they clearly engineered supposedly very well, very tightly, that you've had this unknown problem. Yeah. And I noticed on the Windows Microsoft blog, they tried to get minimize the damage, talking about had people monitoring the situation, sifting through the phone health data. Well, that's all good PR, but you know the problem's already out there, and they should have built an update that didn't knock out the phones in the first place.
You know, the other thing that I thought was kind of bizarre, when they did finally acknowledge that they were pulling the Samsung update and stopping it because of the problem, I kept talking to people who were still able to get it. And so one guy even sent me, a guy who works for a site called mobiletechworld.com, sent me a screenshot showing he could get the download after Microsoft said they pulled it. So I sent them another query back, and I'm like, you guys say it's not there, but it's there. See, it's still there. And then they were like, yeah, we are gonna pull it, but we haven't pulled it yet. So meanwhile, more and more people were downloading it and bricking their phones, right? I'm like, okay. You know, it just felt like, man, for all the kind of testing and telemetry and all this that they talk about, the dog fooding and, you know, all these checks and balances they say they put in place, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And it makes me nervous. I still haven't bought a Windows phone, and I was thinking seriously about buying one, but because I'm a Verizon customer, I can't because Verizon doesn't have a phone yet. Yeah. But after yesterday, I was thinking, you know what? This might be good that I can't buy a phone yet because I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, it makes me kind of wonder, this kind of return a little bit to Nokia and Microsoft. I mean, Nokia is Elop has kind of made a choice here. He staked the company's future on its OS. So there's a problem there. And it also, it seems, I wrote a piece at the time of the deal being announced that highlighted the fact that Nokia doesn't actually have a lot of skill in Windows engineering on its handsets. It's going to, you know, it's a Symbian operation. If anything, it might have a little experience of putting Linux on devices, but not very much with MeeGo. So it's not clear to me, Nokia, where this engineering expertise in Windows on its handsets is going to come from. Well, it's going to come from Microsoft, and you're dealing there with a company that itself has had to rely on the experience of its OEM partners in order to get the Windows phone running on their handsets. So it's not like, you know, Microsoft might build the OS, but, you know, that's only one half of the equation. It's then got to get it working on all these handsets, and that's where it's going to fall down. So it's going to it now looks shaky, especially when you think that, you know, you've got Nokia, which is relying on Microsoft, who's suddenly hasn't got a huge amount of experience in this area, and then it's going to potentially lose a lot of input from other handset manufacturers because they're going to be deterred from working on OS that Nokia is going to be the primary beneficiary of.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, and then going back to your point from earlier about, you know, do people want to do firmware updates this way? You know, actually having to plug their phone into the PC and download the bits. First, you have to make sure your Zune software was up to date on your PC. Then you have to get the bits, make sure you had enough room, storage, make sure you're connected to the internet. Hopefully you knew that, but if you didn't, you had to make sure you were connected to the internet. And, you know, there were all these caveats. And I've asked Microsoft a couple times again, like, you know, so is this the only way you guys are going to do updates? Like when this next update comes, the Nodo update, are people going to have to connect their phones again to the PC and do all this? And I think the answer is yes. I don't think it's going to be pushed over the air. Here we go again.
And it's Microsoft, you know, it's kind of not making the upgrade experience or the update, sorry, experience very easy. I hate to draw the opposite parallel, but, you know, Apple, they make it happen. You click a button, it makes it happen. With Microsoft, you have to get a number of ducks in a row before you can actually make this thing happen. Yeah. That's a deterrent to people, you know, updating their system, especially when it comes to the phone. Right. Tethering your phone to the PC is going to be a nightmare to coordinate. I feel that Apple, for better or for worse, has shaped the culture on when it comes to over-the-air updates on your phone. And, you know, you don't have to tether your phone to your Mac to make it update. You can just make it happen. So it's going to be, you know, who goes around, what phone user is going to, like, go, oh, right, I know what I've got to do. I've got to sync up my phone with my PC, and then I can get the update. You're going to have a lot of phones out there running different versions of software from Microsoft, and, you know, and you're going to have like a cascading effect of problems where, you know, each new update to the phone will rely on the previous update. But if you've got people who aren't updating because they're not tethering, then you've got like a kind of, you've got this whole cascading effect of problems down the road for the phone user.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not cutting Microsoft slack on this, but they're caught between a rock and a hard place here because of the carriers too, right? Like if a carrier, this was very controversial around the time Windows Phone 7 was launched. It was like, how can the carriers block these updates? And the answer was not really, but maybe kind of. And so if a carrier also can block an update because they think it's not ready or they're not ready for it or whatever, then by the time you're ready for the next update, whenever that's coming, you have to get the previous update first. So Microsoft has said a carrier can only block one update, and then by the time the second one's ready, the carrier isn't going to be able to block it, and they'll push it down. So that's a whole other, like, weird dynamic in this whole updating thing that's, I think, like you're saying, it's going to create all these complexities, like which version are you on and who's your carrier, who's your handset provider, and which version of the firmware, which version of the Zune software. I mean, there's a lot of variables in play.
Yeah, it's going to do a lot. You know, from this tiny incident, it kind of like the ripples go out, and it raises questions over the success of the Windows Phone brand, especially if in the minds of the carrier, if they start having problems. And you can imagine that the carriers are watching this incident, and this will create problems, and this will raise questions for Microsoft that will have to reassure carriers that they've got this thing nailed, and this thing won't happen again or won't keep happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess, like, we going back to the original point, Nokia, if you're Nokia, you know, what are you thinking on all this? And, you know, how can you assure your customers that this isn't going to happen to them? And, you know, how much of a role are you going to have as far as being responsible for how these upgrades are done, what kind of firmware is on your handsets and all this? So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think two turkeys made an eagle, but I think I would be very worried if I were Nokia right now.
Well, yeah. I'm just kind of pondering that one. Yeah, well, obviously they knew what I like to think they knew what they were doing, and we can like debate, you know, Elop's decision and whether he really is a Trojan for Microsoft. We'll find out one day
billions of dollars talk, right?
Yeah,
and it was supposedly billions that Microsoft paid. You know, when you add up all the different plans and parts to the agreement, so.
It just boggles the mind about how much money Microsoft gave Nokia for this. Elop interestingly denied that he said Microsoft had paid, I think, billions. But there is a lot. We know there was a bidding war, and we know it might not be cash up front. We know it'll be all kinds of soft concessions as well. It'll be marketing, branding, engineering, etc. There'll be channel stuff going into this partnership as well. Microsoft is not afraid to spending and throwing huge amounts of money at a problem to make it go away, or to kind of like leapfrog the competition and get in first place on something. And that's the kind of thing that people have consistently underestimated before. I mean, we've seen it so many times. I mean, they did the deal with Yahoo to kind of like to insert Bing under the covers on the Yahoo properties as well. Microsoft will pay, sacrifice, and invest dollars, raw dollars, into a project to make it succeed. So that's the thing. We'll see, you know, all that money, will it pay off down the road in a world where, you know, Android is kind of rapidly, you know, is rapidly becoming a hard-paced, fast-paced contender.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Something else where Microsoft's coming from behind is the browser, of course, MJ. And we saw that. I feel we've got this feeling that we're getting ever closer to Internet Explorer 9, don't you?
Yes. We had a betting pool at ZDNet last year, and I bet it was going to ship at Mix. I mean, yeah, I did. I bet it was going to ship at Mix, which is mid-April, but I may be wrong on that, and it may even come a little earlier.
That's where I'd have put my money, but I've got to say, I think the thing is so dumb, they just can't, at this point, just keeping it back.
Yeah, so, part of me wants them to keep it back, because they just issued the release candidate, which is the last release candidate the public's going to see before this thing goes. And I got to say, the release candidate to me is way, way better than the beta was. I mean, I just stopped using the beta because it wasn't working on a lot of the sites I was hitting. And now the release candidate's working better and it's much faster. But I still think it's not ready. It's not quite done.
Why do you think that?
Because there's still problems that I'm having when I'm hitting certain sites like Facebook. And, you know, I think we talked about this on a previous Potter, but we said, whose fault is it that that's happening, right? If Microsoft is supposedly adhering to HTML5 and CSS standards, and then, you know, the browser doesn't look right, I mean, the site doesn't look right in the latest browser, whose fault is that? Is that Facebook's fault or Microsoft's fault? Because, you know, there's supposed to be backwards compatibility built into the browser where you can default to a previous version of IE so you can see things correctly rendering and all that. But things like the Twitter site, the Twitter website, and Facebook, which are two pretty commonly used sites these days, they're not working as well as I want them to work in IE. And I keep going back to Chrome instead because it works better.
Yeah.
Well,
it's interesting because I went to the launch of the RC, and the one browser that Microsoft consistently compared itself to was Chrome.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting term because it's Firefox that really kicked Microsoft into first gear on this, because they basically had turned off development on the browser several years back. Mm-hmm. And Firefox came from nowhere. But now Firefox seems to be having its own problems in terms of being able to actually ship version 4 of the browser. And they've now committed to delivering 4 versions of Firefox in 2011, which, considering their current track record, looks pretty impossible.
It does.
But that's still... And yeah, I spoke to Ryan Gavin about this, who's the senior director of IE Business and Marketing, and he dismissed the fact that Microsoft was letting Google dictate the pace on this thing. But I crunched some numbers on it, and it turns out that the time between the beta and the RC on IE9 is about 6 months, I think it was, whereas the same time on IE8 was a year. So immediately there was more engineering, probably, but the cycle has sped up, and it's not clear what does this mean next. Does this mean that we will see IE10 will come along even faster, or is this just kind of a happy coincidence that IE9 has come out faster? It's interesting, but he denied Google. But anyway, Chrome has definitely given Microsoft some pause for thought, because they're comparing it, at least on performance on JavaScript. The one to beat, as far as they're concerned, is Chrome. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that was interesting, you know, I think we've just beaten this thing to death. JavaScript performance is like, Microsoft surely can't pull out any more kind of like JavaScript benchmarks, you know, desperate attempt to prove they're compatible. and HTML5, I mean, come on, the W3C just said that HTML5 won't be complete until 2014. And yet Microsoft's talking like the thing's already here, as is Apple and Google. They're already talking
about the thing's
already
here. Right, everybody is, yeah.
So if you haven't got that to talk about, what's the next thing you talk about? Well, Microsoft is banging on about privacy, which obviously I'm a big advocate of. I firmly believe in, you know, the right to privacy online. We should be able to, you know, companies, sites shouldn't be selling our data. They shouldn't be tracking our history without us, you know, allowing them to. But now Microsoft's trying to stake a claim to this particular thing, and they're pushing their do not track list up to the W3C, which at the end of February said it would assess the Microsoft's proposed do not track list technology as a potential standard. Which I thought was interesting, because I know about UMJ, but it seems to me whenever Microsoft's got something they wants to have accepted as an industry on an industry-wide basis, they'll push it into a standards committee, and they'll somehow, you know, then the standards politics will go to work. We've had that before. I remember when OpenXML was pushed out as an alternative to ODF.
Right.
So, which is one thing. But then the interesting thing I thought also was both Google and Mozilla are also doing their own do not track approaches as well. And then Mozilla is actually suggested putting a header into the browser, which would tell a website not to track you, and Google's taking its own particular approach on do not track as well. So you've now got the three browser makers offering three separate solutions to do not track online. It's kind of confusing, I think. And I think Microsoft, they're taking different approaches, and Microsoft's trying to go through the standards route, try and force its, you know, and I use the word force in quote marks, force its approach on the industry, whereas maybe Mozilla is trying to have its approach percolate up from the grassroots level, because it says it's pushing its approach out to the community rather than going through a standards process.
Yep. You know, the whole thing with IE9 that's been really interesting to me around this whole standards push by Microsoft is, you know, they've gone 180 degrees. They've gone from not backing HTML5, CSS, like being the worst compliant browser on all those things. And now they, if you go just strictly by tests, are the best, right? Mm. So in the end, I guess I feel like I've got standards overload, and I bet a lot of users feel like that too. It's like, I don't want to see any more Sun Spider benchmarks. You know, yeah. I don't care. You know what I care? I care when I go to my website and I click on it, how long does it take that site to open? Mm. And I care, like, can I go to a Microsoft website with Chrome, and does it render right, or doesn't it? You know, those are the things that I am caring way more about, and I know I'm not a developer. So for developers, it matters a lot more how compliant you are with standards or not compliant. Mm. But I think in the end, you know, what's gonna determine how their market share goes up or down or stays the same is if a user goes to a website and it takes too long to open it, or it doesn't render it correctly. That's what's going to be deciding, you know, how well or poorly they do, more than do not track, more than a JavaScript benchmark or a CSS compliance test. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like they've lost sight of that part of it in a way, you know, and gone 180 degrees the other way now.
Yeah. Well, it's curious. They definitely had a conversion. I think they've... for years of where they said, like, you know, compliance with ACID was not the be all and end all,
right.
And now desperate to prove they are compliant, even if IE9, as I recall, is compliant on ACID 2 but not ACID 3. Mm-hmm. The other thing I thought was interesting was Mozilla put out some negative PR, and if you actually they said IE9 is not a, they said it's quote unquote not a modern browser. Which in some, and now one of our reviewers, Tim Anderson, yep. He actually did a review of it, and he said, you know, he said to beware the hype on IE9. In many ways, IE9 is a catch-up browser because they're packing in technologies and support for specs, etc., that other people have been offering for years. I think the RC Canada packed in the HTML5 geolocation APIs that were in HTML5. These were already offered in, I think, in five, was it Firefox 3.5 that was already available, that technology, and I believe Chrome already offers it. So that's a catch up right there.
Right.
They're offering HTML video and audio tag already offered by the other browsers as well. It's kind of I feel like we're getting to a point in browser development again where it's going to get hard to really differentiate your browser because
yep.
Everyone's offering all the same features and specs mm-hmm. and APIs.
Yep. And it's going to depend, you know, bottom line, going to depend on you go to a browser tab and how fast does it come up and
exactly.
Does it look right? I mean, that's what it's going to come down to.
And the other thing we were talking about was the mobile field, because there
right.
nobody dominates. Nobody's got dominant market share there on mobile users yet, precisely because nobody's actually really worked out how to make it work properly,
yeah.
I think.
But, you know, so that was a really interesting and surprising to many people announcement. Surprising to many people announcement. No, a surprising announcement to many people. Microsoft, when they were talking at Mobile World Congress recently in Barcelona, talked mm-hmm. about the next big version of the operating system for the phone. So the mm-hmm. first one that's going to come in early March is called Nodo, mm-hmm. and that's the copy and paste one. The one after that that's supposed to come this late summer, early fall, is codenamed Mango.
Mm-hmm.
Mango is going to have a new browser in it, and the browser is going to be IE9.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not going to be like they're just calling it IE9. It's actually going to be IE9. It's going to
mm-hmm.
be IE9 mobile, and it's going to do a lot of the exact same things that IE9 on the PC does. So it's going to take advantage of hardware acceleration in the browser.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to probably, I believe, based on what I've read, have this do not track privacy stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have a lot of, not probably not every single feature of IE9 on the PC, but a lot of the same features. And, you know, that's been a huge criticism of Microsoft in the past is, oh, the browser on your phones is so old and creaky.
Mm.
But they're actually, if you believe them, they're going to catch up to themselves with the phone, which I remember I got a tip on this happening, and I'm like, that can't be right. They're not going to suddenly go to IE9 after right now they're on basically on IE7,
yeah.
Right? And kind of not a great version of the browser. It's an okay version in the phone, but it's not great.
Yeah.
So this is going to get really interesting in the mobile space. You know, what's going to emerge as the set of specs that go to the W3C around mobile browsers, and who's going to be the most compliant or not compliant, and what speeds are going to look like on your mobile browser, and how those numbers and factors are going to start playing in with what consumers decide they want.
Well, the other thing also is how far does, you know, Microsoft restrict its market share by just putting IE on Windows phones from Nokia, which is exactly what's going to happen.
Yep.
Or even Windows phones from Samsung and the other guys if they decide to pick it, versus all the other handsets that are going to be running, well, iOS, which will be running Apple's browser, and then Android, which will be running whatever browser, you know, the Chrome, whatever browser that, you know, those guys use. And also there's increasingly a trend with apps, especially to get out from the browser, to move away from the browser. Search is
yep.
one thing, but, you know, the trend is to explode out of the browser and have an app downloaded for your, you know, for your Facebook or for Twitter or
yep.
for Yelp or, you know, for the BBC News, Huffington Post, rather than actually going through the browser to these sites.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what I feel they're doing with, you know, they're kind of enabling that possibly with the fact on IE9, they're kind of making the Chrome receding to the background.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And so that's setting the whole stage for what happens next with tablets and slates, right? Yeah. It's like Apple's kind of been paving the way there, and people are more thinking about downloading a version of the app for that mobile platform. And we're gonna see the same thing take hold in the phone space as well. You know, instead of people going to a browser and getting, kind of a not so great kind of experience, that they're going to have a more customized and supposedly and hopefully better one. Although some of the apps on the iPad, I still go to the browser, I have to say. New York Times app on the iPad, not great. rather go to the browser for that one.
So old school. You're too old school, Mary Jo.
Man, have you tried it? It's not good.
No.
It crashes on me.
I'm not a fanboy like you. I don't own an iPad.
You don't have an iPad? Gavin, sorry. Come on, man.
Sorry.
It isn't helping me with the Apple public, unfortunately. I'm still getting as much hate mail as ever, even though I'm an iPad user. But...
Look, I know they can hate you into loving them, Mary Jo.
That's
just
it.
A matter of time.
It's just a matter of time.
Well, let's,
so should we talk about fun stuff about reorgs and all that good stuff?
You can never have too many reorgs at Microsoft, I find.
No, you cannot. This year has been no exception, as usual.
It's been
usual.
A big ones yep. This year. So yeah. tell us about Satya or Sasha Nadella. I believe there's two pronunciations on this in the air. Which one are we going with on this?
Let's go with Satya. Just because that's what I'm so used to saying.
Good, okay. Satya.
So, yes, Satya Nadella is the new Bob Muglia, based on the latest reorg at Microsoft. So we knew that Bob had decided to hand in his resignation or whatever actually
decided
really happened.
Decided is an interesting way of putting it. I think he was quite happy in his job.
Yeah, I think he was happy in his job, and I think Mark kind of gave him an ultimatum. That's my feeling, and Bob decided to walk.
Yeah.
So they needed a new server and tools chief at Microsoft, and so they started a look inside and outside the company, supposedly, and they came up with their finalist, who is Satya Nadella, who's been at Microsoft for 19 years, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Most recently at the Online Services Division, working on Bing.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he was in business solutions, so he was doing like ERP and CRM stuff there. And he's always been kind of a consistently engineering-focused guy. So he's not your typical suit only, even though he does have his MBA as well. But he's coming into a group where it does matter a lot if you have your engineering chops. because this is the group, Server and Tools is running Windows Server. They're running the whole suite of Microsoft development tools. And they're also running Azure and Microsoft's big cloud push. So he is now taking over as the head of that group. And kind of a side thing that happened as part of this reorg as a result is Amitabh Srivastava, who was running the Microsoft server and cloud team and had been the lead guy on the whole Red Dog Microsoft Azure effort, is leaving. So we can pretty much conclude that Amitabh Srivastava thought he was going to get that job and did not. And he is walking now. So it's a little musical chairs going on over there in server and tools. I am most interested and most closely watching now what's going to happen to Azure as a result of this. And the reason I'm curious is I know, because I've done a number of interviews with the Azure team and talked to the Azure engineers quite a bit, that Amitabh Srivastava was very much loved by that team and seen as a key guy by that team. You know, they've got some pretty big names working there under Amitabh, like Dave Cutler and Mark Rusinovich these days. So I'm curious if those guys are going to stick around or if they're going to walk.
Well, we're talking about this. As we know, it's one thing to build the product, and then you know after that becomes an administration. I wonder if Azure has gone beyond the build phase of its life and it's now in administration maintenance mode, and also business development mode, because we know that Microsoft is looking for ways to make money off this thing. They still haven't cracked that. I noticed earlier in the week that there was some news around them extending the what you get for free on Azure, and they've got the super small computing instance is now available for free until the end of the year. Until June, rather. So they're scratching their heads how to make money out of this thing rather, I think, than building it out. I wonder if the build is already there, but I think you kind of think that still poses a problem for them, doesn't it?
Yeah, I do, because, you know, even though we're not hearing as much about, like, big bang releases, because the way Azure is evolving is they're kind of doing what Amazon is doing with Amazon Web Services, which is adding lots of incremental things all the time, you know, and it's not like, here's Azure version 2. That's not how it works in the cloud. Instead, it's like they're adding, you know, bits and pieces here and there. Here's some new VM role. Here's some of this. Here's some of that. And so the engineering team, I believe, is still very much focused on evolving Azure and adding stuff to it and making sure they're trying to, you know, get up to the same level as some of their competitors like Amazon. So I think it would be hugely problematic for them if this team walks right now, or even if a big chunk of this team walks. So, you know, on the plus side, the guy who they put in as the interim Amitabh, who is going to be taking over his role, is Bill Lang, who runs Windows Server, and he's been working really closely with Amitabh on Azure lately. And he's also a longtime Microsoft veteran and pretty well liked by the team. But again, I wonder if, you know, how deep our loyalty is going to run here. And, you know, say Amitabh leaves and goes and works for a competitor, Microsoft, would those guys go with him? You know, whether he took them or not, but would they go with him?
It'd be interesting to see. I know that as far as cloud goes, it's not like Microsoft. We feel like we're entering a new phase in cloud right now, because we're kind of tracking the Amazon stuff and the OpenStack guys as well. They're kind of struggling in their own particular issues. I think there's a realization it's not enough just to offer a cloud compute infrastructure anymore. You have to make it more usable for the next wave of adopters, and that's what Amazon's trying to do. They put out something called Beanstalk a little while back. And Rackspace is trying to actually make OpenStack work better than it does right now. The compute part of that isn't up and running. The storage is, but the compute part isn't working to the level it needs to make it commercially viable. So in a way, Microsoft has some room to breathe here. They've got a little bit of breathing space because the opposition is kind of drawing its breath for the next round. But if they do lose that team, I'd be curious to see where they go if they go en masse. And I'm sure there's probably some like heavy non-compete clauses in Amitabh's contract that prevents him poaching people. But, you know, people can easily leave of their own volition and go elsewhere. Right. I wonder. And also, I think you were talking about the Azure in a box, which is still missing in action, isn't it?
It is, and you know, that's another one of those things. I'm like, where is that? You know, it was supposed to be out last year, and nobody will talk about it. The OEM partners who Microsoft had lined up to carry it, people like Dell and Fujitsu, they aren't talking. Nobody's saying what's going on. Nobody's even like touching that with a 10-foot pole. So I'm really curious what's happening there. And again, you know, what happens if your team is like in mutiny or whatever when it's time to ship something that's pretty important to your whole hybrid cloud strategy?
I'd be interested to see whether that Azure in a box announcement was anything more than business hype announcements, which we've had plenty of from the past from Microsoft. It makes me wonder what technical difficulties they're encountering, if any. I believe the first phase of this particular announcement was they were going to get this thing running in their own data centers. So we've not seen that yet. I wonder if they're still proving it, trying to get the thing working.
It will be. And the one company that did talk to me when I asked fairly recently about, you know, what are you guys doing, is eBay, because eBay was the big kind of like customer that they held up last year at the PDC and said, these guys, and it wasn't even the PDC, it was like in the summer even, these guys are going to be the customer and you guys watch what they do. And so when I contacted them, they said, we're still working on it and we think it's still going to happen. So they said they're in like customer test phase for it. So I don't think it's just going to disappear, but I'm like you, curious about what the holdup is and why is it running so late and why will nobody talk?
Yeah, there's a lot of politics, a lot of prestige involved in this thing. There's a lot of people trying to work out how to make money out of it as well, how they're going to sell it. You know,
exactly.
Microsoft has not worked out how to sell this thing yet.
How do you not, you know, upset your entire channel by doing this too? Right.
And that's one of the major problems for Microsoft, that they can't just come to market with a product and go, here it is, now sell it. They've got so many vested interests with partners and internally with its own business units, they can't undercut those. And I found it interesting when they announced this change in the Azure offer to get people using the small compute instance. You know, they've had to concede, they've got to give developers the smallest possible compute instance they want. They can't foist something on them that suits Microsoft's business objectives. They've got to give something that gives something the developer what they want. Otherwise, the guys are not going to adopt this thing. And it says to me that they're still struggling to get that first wave of developer adoption from the guys they want.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go on.
No, I was just saying, it's going to be interesting.
more busy months ahead, I think.
It will be.
What do we think? What's the state of the Balmer Mood Index at right now, do you think, MJ? We've got frustrated, intense, all business, victorious, and we've got Monkey Boy. We've had quite a busy couple of months of 2011 so far. So what state is Steve-O in, do you think?
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb.
Hmm.
I'm going to say he's victorious.
Why is he victorious?
Because I think he probably cannot believe he outbid Google for Nokia. I was surprised. I have to say, I was really surprised they didn't go Android. I really was. And
what, with the CEO, who's next, Microsoft guy?
Who cares? He left.
He didn't leave. He's still getting a salary. He's a Trojan. Didn't you hear that?
No, and remember, if you remember, when Elop left, there wasn't a very effusive goodbye note from Steve B.
How do we know that wasn't just PR? That was just for public consumption. It was a little too brief for my liking.
It was very brief. But I really, right until we saw that tweet from Vic Gundrota from Google saying two turkeys don't make an eagle, I really thought they were going to go Android. And once I saw that, I'm like, oh no, Microsoft won the bidding war. Okay, wow. Yeah. How about that? So I think he's probably feeling pretty good about it, even despite the phone problems, despite everything. I bet he's pretty excited. It's almost like he bought Nokia without having to pay for them. It is. It reminds me a ton of the Yahoo deal.
Yeah, I was gonna. That's a very good point. It shows to me Steve-O can still yank it out of the fire when he has to. And there was definite overtones of the Yahoo deal there, which goes to my point earlier of saying how Microsoft might not have the leadership or the technology leadership, you know, the market share or the technology leadership in an area, but they've certainly got the money, and they'll try and come up with a business partnership to kind of to kind of leapfrog, get ahead. And yes, I can definitely see that from that perspective. Yep. Nokia makes sense for Microsoft and Steve-O. Is he victorious? I'm going to go with all business. I mean, it's still heads down, as they say. Yeah. It's still a lot of hard work left to go, and I'm sure he'll brush off the whole kind of firmware update problem on the Samsung phones. You know, I'm sure he thinks they'll iron that out in the course of time.
Yeah.
But I think we said earlier also, it's Microsoft's in a bit of a fallow period right now as well, don't you think, in terms of, you know, IE's done. They're kind of holding on to it, I think, a lot longer than they need to. Office is kind of a bit quiet right now. I don't think the cloud stuff's necessarily working out. They're still trying to work the angles on that. So it's kind of a bit of a, you know, it's the winter months. You know, we're in the middle of winter. It's a fallow time. We're still waiting for the seeds of spring to kind of germinate, I think.
Wow, very poetic.
Well, yeah, I'm a writer. I am a writer.
I heard that. I heard you were a writer.
Well, should we leave it there before
the
drama covered as being
not a writer? So this has been the latest episode of Microbyte, and I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog at ZDNet.
And my name's Gavin Clark, and I'm software editor for The Register. And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.